Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with an appraisal of outgoing Secretary of State Hillary Clinton's testimony before the Senate and House committees, where she faced hostile questions from Republicans who have long tried to blow up the tragic incident in Benghazi into a major foreign policy issue. A former deputy director of the State Department's Bureau of Intelligence, who was an intelligence analyst on Libya, Wayne White, joins us for a reality check. Then we go to Israel for an update on the surprising election results where a little-known new party, Yesh Atid, There Is a Future, came in second. A former speaker of the Knesset, Avraham Berg, joins us to discuss what kind of government coalition Prime Minister Netanyahu will be able to form with this new staunchly secular party, who are unlikely to join a coalition with the right-wing ultra-Orthodox parties who make up the current Likud government. Then finally, we'll look into the new report released today by the Bureau of Labor Statistics showing that union membership in America has dropped to a record low, with a one-year drop in 2012 of union representation in the private sector from 6.9% to 6.6%. John Schmidt, a senior economist at the Center for Economic and Policy Research in Washington, D.C., who is co-author with Lawrence Michel and Jared Bernstein of three editions of The State of Working America, joins us. And joining us now is Wayne White, who is a scholar at the Middle East Institute, specializing in a number of Middle Eastern and North African countries. He was an expert advisor to the Iraq Study Group and previously served as deputy director of the State Department Bureau of Intelligence and Researcher's Office of Analysis for the Near East and South Asia, the State Department's representative to NATO Middle East Working Groups, and as a senior regional analyst. He also served as a State Department intelligence analyst on Libya. Welcome to Background Briefing, Wayne White.
Thank you, Ian.
And today, the Secretary of State had her hearings both before the Senate and House committees on the Benghazi incident, which frankly has been a pretty much a trumped-up crisis from the beginning, largely drummed up by Fox News, it would seem, as a way to undermine President Obama's foreign policy credentials during the last elections. It wasn't a surprise that a number of Republican senators and congressmen came out of the gate with the Fox News talking points. How do you think Secretary of State Clinton handled it?
I think she did pretty well. Personally, on some of the issues that came in front of her, I would have come back harder at them. But she is very, very political and very controlled, and doubtless has some notion of a future in politics, and I don't think she wanted to offend them. But, for example, on the whole issue of the lack of funding for the State Department, which goes back 30 years for security, which I had to deal with abroad, she said the Congress, you know, or the administration and the Congress needs to come together, when in fact this problem has been chronically Democratic. It is partisan, goes back a long way, and it gets to the heart of the fact that a lot of Republicans basically believe the State Department is not doing the kind of work they're interested in. It has a more internationalist view than they do. And they believe it might be even more liberal than they are, and also that it doesn't have a tough enough stance on Israel, as Republicans and often more recently become almost unconditionally supportive of Israel. And so I think there are ways of coming back harder, not by saying all that, but just by putting the blame where it belonged, on the Republican caucus on the Hill.
Well, the Fox News talking points have been fairly scandalous in suggesting that her concussion was faked and that she was avoiding these very hearings. So I think as a showdown, I don't think they were very successful, because I'm not sure that they were dealing with reality. And when the Tea Party Senator Johnson tried to blame her and accuse her of this cover-up about Benghazi. Let's just go to the clip of Hillary Clinton today before the Senate.
But what was going on and why they were doing what they were doing?
No. We were misled that there were supposedly protests and then something sprang out of that, an assault sprang out of that. And that was easily ascertained that was not the fact.
But
the American people could have known that within days, and they didn't know that.
With all due respect, the fact is we had four dead Americans. Was it because of a protest, or was it because of guys out for a walk one night who decided they'd go kill some Americans? What difference at this point does it make? It is our job to figure out what happened and do everything we can to prevent it from ever happening again, Senator. Now, honestly, I will do my best to answer your questions about this, but the fact is that people were trying in real time to get to the best information. The IC has a process, I understand, going with the other committees to explain how these talking points came out. But, you know, to be clear, it is, from my perspective, less important today, looking backwards, as to why these militants decided they did it than to find them and bring them to justice, and then maybe we'll figure out what was going on.
And that was well said.
That'll probably be the soundbite on the nightly news, I imagine.
One of them, yes, and I hope so. But she handled herself very well. She kept smiling through a lot of things that I personally wouldn't have been able to smile through. I'm a little bit more short-tempered and frank. I think she showed herself as a very, very diplomatic and careful person. And she really went to the heart of some of the issues that were a problem in Benghazi, but particularly some of the dysfunction that occurred in the State Department. And I cite in particular the diplomatic security assistant secretariat with which, frankly, Ian, I've had problems. I think it's one of the most dysfunctional parts of the State Department, and it does need help. And I think, frankly, those people probably did the most to fail the secretary in this instance.
So what did you make then, Wayne White, again, scholar at the Middle East Institute, specializing in a number of Middle Eastern countries and North African countries, and he was a expert advisor to the Iraq Study Group and was previously deputy director of the State Department's Bureau of Intelligence and Research, Offices of Analysis, and served as a State Department intelligence analyst on Libya. The substantive part of the discussion, of course, had to do with what's happening in Libya and in the region in general.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure that that was what anybody much was interested in, at least in terms of those that controlled both the House and the Senate committee, the Republicans, who I don't think were interested in a geopolitical lesson about what's happening in that part of the world. But what was your sense of what she had to say there? Because I just spoke yesterday, I think it was, with a couple of days ago with the former U.S. ambassador to Mali, Vicky Huddleston, who really said that that area has been neglected, that the Sahel is roiling, and this is a serious problem that could have been handled earlier, and it's just going to get worse.
Well, as you know, I served in Niger, right next door to Mali, and so I'm pretty familiar with that area, and came up close to the Mali border and went up into that Saharan terrain several times myself, and the entire Sahel, that is the region that encompasses what most people know as Mauritania, Mali, Niger, and Chad, east to west. It's huge. It's about six or seven times the size of the state of Texas, and it's 90% Sahara, and every one of these countries is appallingly poor and generally bereft of any resources the world cares about. And so getting the Congress, which is already chopping down State Department budgets, sufficiently interested in the security of personnel assigned to these very troubled areas, is extremely difficult. And when the United States State Department has to pick apart its priorities from a budget that's already reduced, that just means that the lowest priorities, the smallest missions, and the least critical countries by the standards of the world, you know, oil and the population size, et cetera, are going to get short shrift. And I saw that firsthand. And so naturally, a place like Mali can fester for quite some time without a lot of resources being dedicated to it. Not only just because of what I said, but also because there are other challenges ahead of it in the pecking order, such as Syria, such as putting Libya back together again, et cetera.
So she did, Secretary Clinton did talk about what just happened at this gas facility in Algeria. And it's pretty clear that the remnants of that long civil war, the defeated Islamists who were literally the entire population of Algeria rejected them, even though there was sympathy for them in the beginning. They did actually win an election, or they were poised to win an election when the military canceled the results. And a long civil war, a 10-year civil war ensued. But these people on the feast on the Islamist side became so crazed and so bloodthirsty that they have little traction left, and their remnants went into that area. And then if you could add to that the enormous flow of arms that came out of Libya, and then the idea that somehow this is al-Qaeda's new front, you have a pretty toxic stew there. And my understanding is that it's the military, it's the Pentagon that's starting to look at it, let alone how the State Department's been shortchanged all along.
We've all looked at this, even as far back as in the years shortly after 9/11, one of the extremist Algerian groups, GSPC for its French acronym, which was the precursor for the al-Qaeda in the Maghreb group, had a nasty cell operating in northern Mali, and it was terribly remote. Malian security forces were pretty incapable of handling the mission, to say the least, in this, you know, desolate northern area. And we did provide some assistance, the CIA primarily, guidance on the ground, and we provided some logistical support in order to get at that cell, and pretty effectively. But I have to admit, just to give you an example of how tractable things can be out there, the Algerian government, which is very well known to be dysfunctional, autocratic, corrupt, just a mess, frankly, which is one reason there was an uprising, and only their grip keeps the Arab Spring from spreading there, refused to cooperate with us, even though Mali, at the time of this incident, back in the early part of our new century, was right on their doorstep and involved a group that had gone over the border from their country. They would not send helicopters. They would not assist. And frankly, the gas facility crisis and all the deaths that have resulted also reflects some of Algeria's own fumbling incompetence. Going in initially and machine gunning a convoy that contained the hostages themselves without the consultation with outside experts who might have known a better way of doing it. And having this facility inadequately protected with a major Algerian base nearby is just classic for this region, where you have to deal not only with a huge challenge and a huge territory and poverty-stricken countries to the south, but even dysfunctional regime. The one organized regime to the north is dysfunctional and haphazard in its approach.
Well, interesting enough, Wayne White, Ambassador Vicky Huddleston felt that Algeria was the best ally that the U.S. had in trying to contain al-Qaeda in the Islamic Maghreb.
It is. In the immediate area, it is the only real ally we have. Every other country is too poor to mount anything effective. But the Algerians have shown themselves repeatedly to be rather lethargic about taking an active and aggressive role in this, unless provoked, as in the case of the gas facility. And they should have seen that coming, because they had undoubtedly, perhaps even as far as a week or two ahead, been asked by the French to provide the overflight, the intelligence, things like that, and still were caught flat-footed in a very area where these groups were operating and very close to the Libyan border. And so even our best ally in this area is fumbling, incompetent, and at the extremity of its reach in the deep Sahara to its south, about 90% of its resources are concentrated way up on the Mediterranean coast. And so the vast south of Algeria, the largest country in Africa, is, even by Algerian standards, lightly patrolled and governed.
So, Wayne White, obviously there's a long history there, because one of the leaders of this Islamic Al-Qaeda in the Islamic Maghreb, he fought in the jihad against the Soviets in Afghanistan. And he's apparently been a major smuggler in that region. So it's hard to know where politics end and criminality begin, but it does seem belatedly becoming a focus. Just to quote the Secretary of State, or the outgoing Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, in today's hearings, where the Republicans were trying to beat her up about the Benghazi overblown manufactured crisis, she did talk about the region and said the Arab revolutions have scrambled power dynamics and shattered security forces across the region, and instability in Mali has created an expanding safe haven for terrorists who look to extend their influence and plot further attacks of the kind we saw last week in Algeria. So that would seem to be laying down the gauntlet for her successor, John Kerry.
Yes, and we have to keep in mind again that the Republican caucus in the House and Senate has been an obstacle in dealing with these issues. Let's face it, when we went into Libya to try to contain the damage, to try to get rid of Gaddafi as fast as possible, in a very minimal way, we were just providing refueling for the Europeans for 95% of the action. The Republicans were all over it as a waste of money, as a new war we had gotten into. And now they're the same people who are criticizing for not enough being known, done, etc., about a problem in Libya. In fact, one of the most aggressive questioners was, needless to say, Senator McCain, who advocated going in there, knew the risks of going in there, has been in Benghazi and knows how much of an unmade bed it is politically, but yet doesn't stop for a second before launching into an attack. And the same happened with regard to the issue of the Al-Qaeda in the Islamic Maghreb in Mali. No sooner had we, as you know, noted that we were going to help the French in an extremely limited fashion and a non-combat role, and there were the critics immediately talking about the U.S. starting another war and spending money and getting involved in this place, when in fact there's a real threat there that needs to be addressed, which now they're all asking questions about.
Again, I'm speaking with Wayne White, who is a scholar at the Middle East Institute, specializing in a number of Middle Eastern and North African countries. He was an expert advisor to the Iraq Study Group, and he previously served as Deputy Director of the State Department's Bureau of Intelligence and Research as Officers of Analysis for the Near East and South Asia, and the State Department's representatives to NATO Middle East working groups, and as a senior regional analyst. He also served as a State Department intelligence analyst on Libya. So is there anything, though, to some of the criticisms about what happened in Benghazi, not the, the propagandistic Fox News stuff that was used in the campaign that was just sort of manufactured, and which many of the Republican Tea Party types and of course, that libertarian zealot, Senator Rand Paul, they all seized on that. But there seems to have been some legitimate criticism, in as much as there was, as you pointed out, a very small footprint in going in there, and that allegedly it was the women in the administration who weighed in on Obama, and the Joint Chiefs did not want to go in, apparently, but it was Hillary Clinton and Samantha Power and Susan Rice and others who convinced Obama that he had to act, and that there was a bias on the part of Hillary Clinton to more or less assume that everything was okay because they wanted to stick to this narrative that this had worked, the small footprint. Is that an explanation for the lack of security?
No, I don't think so. I think you get trapped, or people in the State Department have traditionally become trapped, and it's a trap not of their own making, of being underfunded, and therefore trying not only to keep a footprint small in an insecure place like Libya, as it's trying to take form with militias that are still armed out there, but also to lowball requests regarding security, because you know that if you make the request you think you're going to need, the Republican caucus in the Congress is going to whittle it down, chop it down, reject it. And so you fall, there is a groove, sort of a rut you can fall into in lowballing your own needs in order to try to comply with a problem that we've been dealing with for decades of the Republicans belittling foreign policy, belittling the role of the State Department, and therefore not wanting really to provide any assistance, enough assistance so that you can cover all your bases.
But wasn't there a big influx of money and attention after the embassy bombings in Africa that were the first blows that Osama bin Laden struck against the United States?
Not as much as you'd think. Sure, in East Africa, in where these bombings took place, in Dar es Salaam and in Kenya, that got a lot of attention, but that did not make money available for the entire breadth of the area that needed focus. And, some of the problems that we have out there are just going to be endemic. We are going to be dealing with instability in particularly central North Africa below the Sahara, because these countries are barely viable. France went in there in the last gasp of colonial expansion, even against the wishes of its own war ministry, because they wanted to focus on Germany and Europe, and went in there because it was the last territory that was available adjacent to their colonies along the coast, and went in there conquering it with light resources, governed it lightly, and so the countries were barely viable. The French didn't really make them any more viable by their intervention, and this is just going to go on and on. And also, we have something that feeds into the Al-Qaeda in the Maghreb narrative, and that is the Tuareg tribes that fan out across northern Niger and northern Mali are inherently in conflict with the settled peoples to their south, most of whom are the governing bodies of the governing communities of these countries, because they have such large populations compared to desert nomads. And the raiding and the smuggling and what goes on to the north is looked down upon, and the Tuareg are hostile. And so the Tuareg naturally can be recruited into dissident organizations and now even radical organizations. They're already recruiting ground. And so this area is going to remain a problem. And, in fact, we can't even talk about a Malian problem, because if, as the French, and I've been watching this closely, Ian, as the French have been pressing into Mali, I'm just waiting for desperate Al-Qaeda in the Maghreb personnel to squeeze out like out of a toothpaste tube in northern Niger and make that a problem that is even more difficult to address, because Algeria isn't next door. We have an unruly Libya next door to that region.
Well, just in closing, Wayne White, what I'm getting from this conversation is something I'd like to explore with you just in the last few minutes here, that these desperately poor parts of the world, these failed states, that we don't have an interest in them because it's almost not much you can, or if anything, you can do about them.
Right. But, our interest is 90% AID.
Right, but
oriented in these countries,
sure.
Or was.
But then when they become influenced by Al-Qaeda, et cetera, then they become a military front, and then we pour enormous amounts of resources, military resources in, and get sucked into a war which has no inherent strategic value to the United States, and yet the money that we spend on these wars represents, a hundredfold what we could have spent in making them less a failed state in the first place. Does that make sense to you?
Oh, absolutely. Even though I think these states have a very thin possibility of becoming something a lot better than a failed state, these problems in little-known countries with largely bereft of resources are allowed to fester until they become a military or an intelligence problem. In this area, essentially, we're lucky in a way because France still considers everything from Chad all the way over to Senegal part of its realm of influence. In fact, these countries are loosely tied to France in a sort of British Commonwealth sort of way, so they can call upon her for help. She's intervened repeatedly in Chad, particularly when the Libyans invaded it under Gaddafi. But at least France is there to take, you know, the forefront of the military action in this case, because the African countries that are sending contingents, as was made clear, I think, in the hearings, these troops are not up to the task at all. The Senegalese detachment that was being sent to Mali was held up because the detachment didn't have enough ammunition. That's how bad off they are. And so, yes, a lot of groundwork that could have been done if we had had more funds from the Congress to be more liberal in addressing these more remote areas could have gone a long way to reducing the instability by simply making the central governments of the South a lot stronger and a lot more professional.
Well, Wayne White, I thank you very much for joining us here today.
I thank you for having me.
Again, I've been speaking with Wayne White, who's a scholar at the Middle East Institute, where he specializes in a number of Middle Eastern and North African countries. He was an expert advisor to the Iraq Study Group and previously served as Deputy Director of the State Department Bureau of Intelligence and Research's Office of Analysis for the Near East and South Asia, the State Department's representative to NATO Middle East Working Groups, and as a senior regional analyst. He also served as a State Department intelligence analyst on Libya. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back and go to Israel for an update on the just concluded elections.